are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
But Jonathan, we are pretty much can't regress batting average-wise and stay in the majors unless he learns how to pitch.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
I don't know if you remember that. Terrell Owens on an episode of MTV Cribs, I think it was, got in his hyperbaric chamber a couple years ago. I'm ready to get this going.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Friends with Fantasy Benefits team preview podcast. As I would have been stereotyped or profiled, I am part of the Milwaukee Brewers team preview. I live an hour and a half north of Milwaukee, and Milwaukee is my team. I bleed blue and gold Brewer colors. And along for the ride is, that's Mike Levin. How are you today, Mike?
What's going on, Chuck? I'm glad I get to share this with you, but full disclosure, I am not a Brewers fan, but I do like the team.
Yeah, it's a very interesting team. It's gone through some really interesting transitions in the last couple years in the David Stearns era, and we will be certain to get to that soon. Mike, why don't you, full disclosure style, give us your Twitter feed so people know to follow you.
Fitz, you can follow me at Mike the Rotocop, common spelling, and I'm ready to get this going.
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting stuff going on at FWFB. Our fearless leader, Justin Mason, is getting us into all sort of things. The great fantasy baseball invitational. A number of us analysts are going to be in that coming up, and things are going to be exciting. We'll have a lot to talk about, even though it's been very odd off season so far, which is another thing. It's actually a nice launching point for our conversation on the Brewers, Mike. I am Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. I do a weekly column during the season called Of Note, which tries to sort of guide you through the fantasy landscape. And I'm already carving out my ideas and ways to get us started on that venture. As far as the Brewers are concerned, it's ironic that we waited a few extra days to do the preview because in the interim, the rumors came out that the Brewers had made an offer to Yu Darvish, who is presently, at the time of our recording, appears to be getting close to a deal with the Chicago Cubs. But the Brewers had made an offer to Yu Darvish, and they also were supposedly, through Jerry Krasnick, they were supposedly very close to making a trade for one of their outfielders, which the outfield surplus is something that we're going to touch on in this podcast. Now that it's been a few days since that outfield trade rumor has happened, and since we should probably cover him anyway, one of the first people we're going to talk about is I coupled two people together. They both had breakout seasons last year. They are the 25-year-old right fielder Domingo Santana and the 27-year-old third baseman Travis Shaw, both acquired on the cheap. And now the real question is, are these guys going to repeat or are they going to fade?
Now, before I answer that, I just want to say, in 2015, the Brewers got Hader, Domingo Santana, and Phillips for Carlos Gomez and Mike Fiers. What a trade that turned out to be.
Yeah, David Stearns has made very few mistakes. I mean, the notable mistake, of course, is the Chris Davis with a K trade for Jacob Nottingham. That has not worked out so well. But pretty much every other trade that he's done, he's hit on. So you have a good point there.
Yeah, that's something else to get those two, three guys. Now with Santana, and I look at him, he had a great season, 30 homers, 15 stolen bases, hit close to 280. But he had 178 strikeouts, which was, I think it was ninth in MLB. And his BABIP was 363 compared to a 278 average. So that's obviously not going to be sustainable. So I think his average is going to go down. And the 178 Ks, I'd like to shy away from. I'm anti-strikeout, as anybody anti-strikeout could be. But with him, the power-speed combo at only 25 years old presents the upside. The thing with Shaw, even though I think he was 299 before the All-Star break, 242 after the All-Star break. And he had a great year too, 30 homers, 10 stolen bases, 100 RBIs. I have him as my 12th ranked third baseman. Now, the question you posed to me was who's more likely to repeat. And I'll say Shaw's more likely to repeat just because Santana set the bar pretty high for himself. Santana has more upside, but I like Shaw more likely to repeat.
Well, it's kind of interesting because the way this works out is almost all the Brewers, when you look at their projections on Steamer, etc., are all expected to regress batting average wise, with the exception sort of being Jonathan Villar, because Jonathan Villar pretty much can't regress batting average wise and stay in the majors unless he learns how to pitch. The point being is that there seems to be a lot of planned regression. You made some really interesting points on Santana and Shaw. First of all, I did notice that Santana's K rate is really not that far over league average. You know, league average now is 21%, I believe, for Ks, and his K rate is right around that for a guy who, you know, hit 30 home runs. So not quite as bad. 29.3% was his K rate last year. So for a power hitter, it wasn't terrible. He had 88 runs and 85 RBIs, but I'm wondering out loud if the 15 stolen bases are real. He really had not shown much of a tendency to actually steal bases before that. Rarely, I think it's 2013 was the last year, even with minor and major added together, that he got over 10 stolen bases. So the 15 stolen bases appears to be an anomaly. Now, when it comes to Shaw, I remember Shaw distinctly fading in the second half as a Red Sox and as a Brewer. His career batting average in August and September is well below 250. I believe it was 232 for both August and September last year. So he's definitely had some problems finishing the season. He's a big guy for playing third base. He's got soft hands. He's a decent fielder. He was a steadying influence last year for the Brewers, for sure. But they kind of have a logjam at first, so he doesn't inherently get any sort of days off or any time to relax at first base versus third base, and I think that's an issue as well. His 110-plus RBIs last year was a huge bonus and a bellwether, and I've also noticed, and I'm distinctly trying to find it right now, where Travis Shaw's ADP is going.
I believe it's at 85. 85 and Santana 71, last I saw.
Yeah, 85 is a little higher than I would like to go on Shaw. I do fear some regression. I saw he's looked at to be somebody who hits around 250 this coming year instead of the 273. And I would rather have a guy who's a slow finisher than a guy who's a slow starter, which may be just a quirky thing about myself. I would rather start out the season decent and sort of be in there and sort of plan for maybe a fall off late instead of having somebody who really struggles early. Mark Teixeira syndrome would be something that you New Yorkers know well. He had a tendency to start historically slow year in and year out. It is curious because I think both of their draft prices are really high compared to last year, obviously. But for some reason I have 56 for an ADP in the NFBC draft that I'm doing right now, for an, average draft position for Santana. And I don't know if that's just those style drafts, the 12 team draft that I'm in versus the 15. But yeah. I think I came out publicly and said that the swing seems long and balky, and he had some problems staying healthy at the end of 2016. And so my gut tells me that I will not be owning any shares of Domingo Santana unless I can get him close to Travis Shaw's ADP of 85. And I will not be owning any pieces of Travis Shaw unless I could get him outside of the top 100, which both seems unlikely. So I guess my trick question now, answer is I don't care for either one of them.
Yeah,
as a draft value. I found some quirky things too. I usually don't do this. This is my Evan. Evan Peterson imitation. I was looking through all the Shaw numbers and trying to see if there was something really different in the batted ball. And then, of course, I went to his splits. And I found this really odd, and I'm curious if you find it as odd as I do. Travis Shaw, when the count is even, okay, 219 at-bats last year, or as with a 2-2 count, hit .160.
Interesting.
That seems really low to me. When it was 1-1, he hit .396. So, and oddly enough, when he was in a 3-2 count, he batted .140.
So, it's a weird one.
Yeah, once he got to 2-2 last year, he was in trouble. So if you own Travis Shaw this year, sort of take notes and see. And I looked over the last 3 years, and that's very much been a trend for him for some reason. So, you know, just the quirkiest thing that you might not have been able to hear or had no reason to hear had you not listened to this. I will say this about Santana and Shaw. Shaw battled last year against lefties and did pretty well. And they both will use the whole field, which works kind of nice. Santana has opposite field power, especially to right center. But the short porch, the little dining area, et cetera, that they have that sticks out in right field is also something that can help maintain their power strokes. I do think they'll be good for power. 10 stolen bases from Shaw last year. I would be stunned if either one of them had double-digit steals next. Well, I mean, the good news is when you're talking about third base, even 6 or 7 stolen bases is actually kind of a surplus at that position once you get past Jose Martinez, I guess. So those were sort of the two breakouts from last year that I wanted to touch on. The Brewers are kind of a loaded offensive team. But we're going to, before we go back to some hitters after this, let's talk about a starting pitcher. Let's talk about the 30-year-old Chase Anderson. I asked you if he was Mr. Disrespected coming off of last year. What are your thoughts on Chase Anderson going forward? He sort of fell into the primary starter role with the injury that happened to Jimmy Nelson late in the season.
Chase Anderson is a very interesting guy. I mean, he had a great season. His ERA was a 2.7 in 140 innings pitched. He went 12-4. Problem, his peripherals aren't that great. His xFIP was, I think it was a 4.3. But he had the strikeouts, 8.5 Ks per 9. I mean, he's easily the best pitcher on this staff when Nelson's out, unless they maybe go out and get Darvish, and then I'd take Darvish over him. But Anderson's pretty good. He might not be a 1, but he could form maybe a really good 3 or a back-end 2.
Yeah, he's an interesting case study. The Brewers are coming off a year where they got a lot out of their pitchers. Everything from their young lefty.
Yeah, they
got a ton. I was just talking about Zach Greinke before the show started, and I got my Zachs interlocked in my head. Anyway, Zach Davies really overperformed last year, what you would expect. Jimmy Nelson had a breakout season, and Chase Anderson had a breakout season. Now, Chase Anderson, most of his success can sort of be pointed to the fact increased usage in his cutter. Was a highly effective pitch, and he threw his cutter more and his regular fastball less, induced a lot more soft contact. His hard hit percentage last year against was down 5%, and his medium hit percentage was down 13.5% last year. And so that explains a lot. His fly ball tendencies actually went up a little bit, but the weaker contact meant that those fly balls didn't leave the yard because his home run to fly ball percentage was easily well into the single digits and was easily the lowest that it's been at the major league level. He's only pitched basically in the majors in Arizona and in Milwaukee, so he's always been in sort of hitter-friendly parks. So I do find Chase Anderson to be a very interesting person who seems to be going pretty low in drafts. Do you have his ADP handy?
Yeah, I have it here, 161. And that's for a guy who outperformed league average in Ks per 9, walks per 9, Ks to walks, homers per 9, K percentage, walk percentage, everything. He's better than league average. So 161, I mean, it's not the greatest ADP for him, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah, I would have to say that would be a old Chase Anderson stigma.
Yeah.
The transformation last year caught no one by more surprise than me. I had sort of thought that he was a throw-in in the trade, that they got him in, and I just thought they were just using him to eat innings at the major league level while kids developed. And then last year he blossomed into something that nobody saw coming. So the point that I was getting to about what they did with their pitchers next year is that it'll be interesting to see if they can make this a trend, because all of a sudden they look like a place where you can go and find new life. Yolish Chacin is somebody they picked up this offseason. He's a guy who had a really strong run in the middle towards the end of last season. And he's another person who may come under this tutelage and maybe they can find something with. Jimmy Nelson is a guy that they literally altered the grip and switched the differences between his breaking pitches last year. And that was the big reason for his breakout last year. So they are tinkering with hoping is analytics and finding ways to get as much as they can out of their pitchers. You know, going into last year, their pitching depth was kind of a joke. And this year, even though they don't have the frontline guys that you'd like to see them have, they have guys like Brent Suter. They have guys like Brandon Woodruff. They have guys that are coming off modest runs of success that seem to be able to tie their staff over until they get Jimmy Nelson back. Now, Jimmy Nelson had an odd shoulder injury, and it was running the bases. So you hear some people talking about how pitchers shouldn't hit, et cetera, and so forth. I'm sure that, a lot of Brewer fans after that Nelson injury, and since they were still in the playoff chase last year, sort of agree with that synopsis. But the point being is that we'll have to see if he's going to be the same pitcher once he gets back. I had a very, very early draft, and I drafted him, and so I'm hoping that that he comes back at least at 85 or 90%.
So a couple notes on these pitchers. I think the Chacin signing was great. I mean, how many guys last year threw 180 innings and had a year under four with the 7.6 Ks per nine, you know? Chacin, I think, has some fantasy value. Davies, I think Chacin has more fantasy value than Davies, to be honest, because of the strikeouts. But with Nelson, last I heard, he was sleeping in a hyperbaric chamber, one of those things that Terrell Owens invented, I guess. I don't know if you remember that. Terrell Owens on an episode of MTV Cribs, I think it was, got in his hyperbaric chamber a couple of years ago. Yeah, so
I appreciate the effort, no matter what. it's good news in and of itself. Can't hurt anything, yeah, I guess.
Nah, so Nelson, I mean, I would be cautious with them just because it's going to be a slow back for him. He's still a younger guy, so they're not going to throw him to the Wolves right away. He'll go five innings. But maybe towards the end of the season, you're getting full Nelson value for what you get him at.
Yeah, I mean, there's some hope there at least. Some people will have crossed him off the list, especially having a shoulder injury to his pitching arm. So there is perhaps some upside there in what people perceive to be as his zero value sort of going into the season. There's definitely some hope for that. I mean, my sleeper on the team that I will own multiple shares of is Brandon Woodruff. I heard multiple reports via Fangraphs and other outlets that he really has two well above average major league pitches and an average major league pitch, which is a really, really good sign for any young starter. And also that he had some young struggles last year in his throwaway pitches when he got ahead in the count, 0-2, what have you. He had this tendency to waste his waste pitches, meaning that his waste pitches were so far outside that he got very little swing and miss from them and didn't really trust his stuff. So I believe there is ample upside with Brandon Woodruff. Obviously, Josh Hader is the other pitcher, as long as we're trying to touch on all the pitchers. Josh Hader is the other pitcher who is interesting in this modern era that we live in. They acquired Boone Logan as a lefty specialist, which will allow Josh Hader to be a Chris Devenski type in the bullpen, or perhaps transition into the starting rotation. You have thoughts on Josh Hader as well?
I love everything that Josh Hader did last year. And it's a really weird story because in AAA last year when he started the season, his ERA was over a 5. 2016 in AAA, his ERA was over a 5. And that was over the course of 26 starts. Now he comes in 2017 as a reliever and lights out in the 35 games he played in. So the thing with Hader is I want to see him at the back end of the bullpen, and him and Corey Knebel could be what I think is arguably the best 8-9 in baseball.
Wow, that's very high praise with some of the monster bullpens that are out there. Although I do see that sort of upside. When Hader was on, it'd just be a matter of usage and wear and tear you still have to see on these younger guys, which is how I feel about a Knebel too, coming off a heavier and much more stressful workload last year. I'm a little stunned. I expected a good deal of helium on Knebel, but I'm seeing him going as a top four or five reliever in a lot of spots. So that seems like a small leap of faith. I mean, if he's healthy, I'm not worried about him. But he did have sort of a reputation of not being exceptionally durable before last year. So maybe he just matured into his own. And, you know, just like we say, somebody's healthy until they're not. Somebody's injury prone until they're not. So hopefully Knebel holds up for the Brewers. I just have this general fear that everything went so right for the Brewers last year that I'm trying to figure out and sort of dodge this minefield on where things are going to go wrong. And you'll kind of be able to see that in the questions that I pose to our friend Mike Levin, who, as usual, is more than amply studied up for the topic, which makes him very easy to work with.
Appreciate it.
All right, let's talk about what I coined a center field mess. And let's talk about how you feel about the various center field options for the Brewers, and you can even go ahead and rank them for us. Where are you on those guys?
So between Brinson, Broxton, and Phillips, that's the order I have them in. I have Brinson, then Broxton, and then Phillips. Now, a little bit about Brinson is I was waiting for this guy to get called up, waiting to see what he could do, so excited about it, and he just completely fell on his face. He had a 30.9 K percentage, which is odd because in AAA last year it was 18.2, the year before that 22.6, even in AA it was 19.6. He's never struck out as much as he struck out in the majors, so I'm hoping he makes the adjustments and does what he needs to do because he's great in the field. So once he gets that back going, he's going to be a special player. I do think he has a lot more fantasy value than people are leading on for because he's never struck out like that, and I don't plan on him striking out like that again. Now with Broxton, that guy just strikes out in his sleep. I really want not much to do with Keon Broxton. I don't even know if he's going to be there in the long run. But he was 10th in the MLB in strikeouts. He still went 20-20, but he had less than 50 RBIs and hit 220. That's just not what I'm looking for at all. And Phillips doesn't really have any value to me until he proves otherwise. I mean, he was a pretty good minor league player. I know he has a little bit of speed, but until he takes that next step, no value.
Interestingly enough, fantasy-wise, the player of those three that I like the most for this year is Brett Phillips, which maybe this is insider perspective from somebody who follows the Brewers as closely. I'll make a few points on Phillips' behalf. Number one, Phillips has arguably the strongest arm I've ever seen on a center fielder, and they fell in love with that arm down the stretch last year, which is another point I was going to get to, which that they used him almost exclusively in center field the last 3 to 4 weeks of the season when they needed to win every game to try and stay in the wild card race. I would also note that the 276 that he hit with a 351 OBP was pretty good, especially last year, considering that, you know, he had almost a 35% K rate, which is unusually high for his minor league statistics, although he did get towards the 30% K rate some in the high minors, which I understand people would be openly concerned with. You know, 5 stolen bases in 37 games last year, I thought was another really good sign for Phillips. And I'm gonna make the case for Phillips this way. Brinson, to me, is a guy who has always had adjustment problems at each level. I mean, once he's adjusted at each level, he's gotten very good. If the Brewers are still in rebuild mode, as I fully think they are this year, I believe that they will want to be pretty cautious with how much time they use Brinson at the major league level. And I think Brett Phillips is the most likely guy to get the first crack at the job. And I also strongly believe that Phillips being the older prospect, etc., if you're going to use your prospects sort of in stages, seeing what you have in Brett Phillips is what's going to be important. Now, this is also of note. I don't think Brett Phillips is a must-own in smaller leagues or anything like that. What I'm basically saying is that in deeper leagues, as a late-game flyer, the guy that I like the most in this center field mess is Brett Phillips, which I fully realize is another thing that will put me in the minority. But like I said, when the games really mattered last year, Brett Phillips was on the field a lot. And Keon Broxton was relegated to pinch hitting, and Lewis Brinson was not getting at bats. So they even tried Jonathan Villar in center field at the end of the year last year. So to me, I sort of am taking some cues from where I see the organization where the organization is on these players at this moment.
I see what you're saying, but the couple of things on Phillips here, he struck out. I know small sample size; he only had 100 at bats last year, but he struck out 34.7% of the time. His BABIP was over 400, and his average was only 276. I know it's a small sample size, but the year before that in AAA, his BABIP was a 412, and he only hit 305. So those numbers obviously aren't sustainable, and he strikes out at a decent rate here. But one thing that you said, another thing about them being in rebuild mode, I don't get that kind of vibe if they're going after Darvish, or supposedly going after Darvish.
Yeah, I mean, that is the around here, we're trying to figure out if they're doing that for looks, because it looks like they're going to miss out on Darvish. And early in the offseason, they were sort of kicking the tires on Arrieta. The issue with me is not that they would be willing to spend some money, as they had only $63 million in payroll last year, but the idea that they would invest in a 32-year-old pitcher like Arrieta, or a high mileage, the Asian pitchers are used very heavily when they're in Japan, etc. A high mileage pitcher like Darvish, when the rest of the mode that they seem to be in seems to realize that they're 2 or 3 years away from being the truest form of contenders, is a little stunning to me. And until I went into the offseason telling multiple people that I thought they were going to get an inning eaters type for the back end, and that's how they were going to invest in pitching. And I mentioned Chacin on multiple occasions, so my friends were surprised that I was right on that call. But Chacin seems to fit where they're at right now to me. You know, 2 years, a relatively cheap investment. To me, Darvish and Arrieta don't seem to fit where they are. So I'll be curious to see if that's if this happens, because a whole bunch of stuff is going to happen between now and when the season starts, because these guys have to sign. So unless they run into the right deal, I still think that you're going to see them more in rebuild mode than they are win now mode. I think if they were in win now mode, they would have signed Anthony Swarzak back. They'd been looking for maybe one more high leverage reliever, you know, Addison Reed, who wanted to be as close to Cleveland as possible. Could have been a few hours closer to Cleveland and signed in Milwaukee instead of Minnesota. So I'm just I'm trying to read the tea leaves here, and it's not always easy. I will be at Brewers Fan Fest at the end of the month, and maybe I'll get some more inkling when I'm there, since Stearns will obviously be there, and as well as the Brewer brass, and I will try and hobnob a little bit and get a little further indication as to where they're headed. So, unbelievably enough, Phillips is the one that I like the most, which is ironic because Brinson is going well ahead of Phillips in all forms of drafts. And Brinson does have the more upside, for sure, so I can kind of see that. And we've been throwing around the idea in the FWFB chat that Broxton might still get traded to San Francisco, who we still think needs a lot of outfield depth compared to what they have. Mm-hmm. So Broxton appears to be on the out. They got a lot for Keon Broxton for what they gave up for him. So there's a lot to be said for that. All right, now let's turn to the dirt, which we haven't talked about yet. And let's talk about some interesting and, I think, polarizing infielders. Let's talk about what you think is more likely, a Jonathan Villar bounce-back season or an Orlando Arcia breakout season.
Now, I think by default, you got to go with Arcia here because Fiore bounces back. What's really a bounce back here? He's not going to hit 285 again. He's not going to hit 19 homers again. And he's not won't have over 60 RBIs again. The guy only stole 23 stolen bases last year. So even if he goes 40 stolen bases at the very highest, he's still going to hit 250 with 15 homers at most and 55 RBIs at most. I really want nothing to do with VR. I'm so sick of him. From day one, I've been so sick of him. He had 132 strikeouts in 122 games. I'm so past the VR train. But Arcia is pretty good. Arcia, 15 homers, 50 RBIs, 15 stolen bases. I think you could definitely expect a little bit more from him as he takes the next step. I know he wasn't known really for his bat. He was more of a glove guy going through the minors. But he almost hit 280, and I have him as my 19th ranked shortstop, which sounds bad, but if he breaks out, that number could easily be 13 or 14 because the shortstop's got some pretty good players there.
Yeah, shortstop is definitely not what it used to be 8, 10 years ago when you were just sort of trying to accumulate at bats that didn't hurt you. You can accumulate a lot of at bats that really help you with shortstop now. I have a tendency to agree with your analysis here. Orlando Arcia is only 23 years old, and like you mentioned, he's coming off a 15 home run and 14 stolen base season. There's definitely risk with both of these players to a certain extent. There was stretches of time last year where just to make sure and get at-bats for Eric Sogard, who's the middle infielder we're not talking about that they re-signed, to get Eric Sogard at-bats that Arcia was actually sitting once or twice a week to get Sogi those at-bats. Now, Arcia's weakness as a hitter is obviously that he's a pretty free swinger. He's not a very patient hitter at the plate. It's also never easy to bat eighth in a National League lineup. So it limits his opportunities to see some good pitches at times and limits his opportunities for RBIs being at the bottom of a National League lineup and runs scored with the pitcher being between them and the run producers. So there's some downside here, but Arcia is sort of a target for me in the context that I think prospect analysis struggles the most with middle infielders. This is a recurring theme from my Of Note column. You know, last year I got up on the soapbox and screamed to the hills that a lot of these young shortstops that everyone was jumping on last year were going to struggle. And Trevor Story was the poster boy, and Xander Bogaerts was right there, and Seager didn't take a next step, sort of stayed where he was. I mean, there was a random dispersion of results from the early drafted middle infielders last year, and I think there's more of that to come. And the beauty of that is that I think you can catch lightning in a bottle from some of these late round shortstops. I know Ozzie Albies is only eligible at second base right now, but he's actually a shortstop by trade. I like him. I like Orlando Arcia late. I really like Marcus Semien, who's going really late. So shortstop is actually a position that I'm intending to wait on in a number of drafts because I don't trust the production of the top tier of shortstops, and I don't trust, and I like some of the lower-end shortstops. Andrelton Simmons was a shortstop who had a really nice breakout last year, and he's also going to have a much better lineup around him. So within that context, I agree with you that Arcia could really break out, especially as a draft value overall. Jonathan Villar, just the mention of him brings me back to my very first podcasts with FWFB. I mentioned they had acquired Jonathan Villar, and I was of the belief that he was going to have a hard time even landing the starting shortstop job because I did not feel like his hit tool was strong enough, and I thought they may move Hernan Perez back to shortstop, which is where he came up as a Tiger. And I sort of got laughed at for showing any love for Hernan Perez, which, of course, turned out to be good for me because as a utility guy, Hernan Perez has proven to be a pretty useful player for the Brewers and useful in NL-only leagues and deeper fantasy leagues over the last couple years as well. But so I had a base disbelief in VR's actual ability to handle the bat. And for a while, I thought I really looked like an idiot. And I thought to myself, well, that's why, you know, you shouldn't always put yourself out there, because they're humans and they surprise us. But last year, he looked about as bad as you could look. And he's definitely in danger. His platoon splits meant that he was completely cut out from one side of the plate by the end of the year. You know, on sort of to his credit, he made an outstanding defensive play two-thirds of the way through the season last year, but it really messed with his shoulder. And so when he came back, he you don't know if he was 100% or not at the end of the season. But three or four different times, the Brewers went back to him as a leadoff hitter last year in the hopes that he would take the ball and run with it, and he did not do that any of the times. I might not be quite as negative as Mike is on him for one reason. I do feel like he has a mini bounce back, a bounce back to between what he was last year and what he was 2 years ago. If he could figure out a way to, you know, sneak his OBP back up to the 310 sort of range at least, and he could get half the at-bats, I wonder if, you know, 40 stolen bases isn't sort of the minimum that he could get to if he was even getting on base semi-regularly, which means I don't disagree in principle to what Mike is saying. I'm just noting that late-game flyers for stolen bases are not the easiest thing to come by in this day and age. And with that being his carrying tool when he is getting at bats, I think there's some reason to sort of hope that he hits just enough to keep the job for large chunks of time and maybe amasses enough stolen bases to help you in roto leagues. He certainly could be something to help you in a points league or any other format that didn't weigh so heavily on stolen bases.
Let me ask you a question here, Chuck. Jonathan VR, 2018, goes 246, 15 homers, 58 RBIs, 24 stolen bases. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the stolen base total is too low for the rest of the numbers. I think if he manages to get to double digit home runs, I have a feeling that he's going to accrue enough at bats that I think you're looking at more of a 35. We were talking about a guy who led the National League in steals 2 years ago with 63, and by no means claiming that that's the remotest possibility of happening again. Obviously, the Billy Hamilton injury is the only reason he led the league in stolen bases that year. But the point being is that I think if he plays a lot, he's, you know, easily a 35 stolen base kind of guy. It's going to take a lot of playing time for him to hit double-digit home runs. And so the stats that you gave me sort of don't jive in my head together. I do think he probably – and another reason it doesn't jive is I think he needs to hit up over 260 to really get playing time. The organization seems to really like Eric Sogard a lot. And obviously they're not completely done tinkering. You know, they were rumored to be in on Josh Harrison, et cetera, and so forth. They're probably not done tinkering with what they might do in the middle infield either. Hernan Perez can play some second base. So they have some different options as to how they can handle it. So, like I said, I don't completely disagree with your sentiment. I think I see a little bit more ray of hope in fantasy value. Not in real life value per se, but in fantasy value than you do. The fact that he can play shortstop and second base, which does kind of make him Eric Sogard in a way, but he does offer high level speed when he can make his way onto the field for stretches of time.
Yeah, well, those numbers I read you, the 246, 15, 58, 24, those were Jose Reyes 2017 numbers.
Well, I mean, Jose Reyes managed to do most of his damage towards the end of the season, if memory serves mm-hmm. me correctly. So the only good news about that was that, you know, you had him on your bench for a long time, and when he got hot, you got him in there. So he didn't do as much damage when he was struggling. The bad news about Jonathan VR last year is that he heavily invested in him, and he was a high pick. He's really one of the shortstops I should be talking about that struggled last year. And you were so invested in him that you had to use him for the first month and a half or so of the season, which was anything but anything but an enlightening situation. Probably raised a number of ires in the fantasy world of people that assumed that he couldn't nearly go from what he was in 2016 to what he was in 2017. As long as we have a couple minutes here, and you're so well versed, which is, like I said, is very helpful. Let's talk about their Korean import. Let's talk about Eric Thames. How do you feel about Thames going into next year? Is he somebody that you like with the idea that he's outfield and first base eligible?
No, to be honest with you, I'm not a fan of him at all. Low average. He hit 180 against lefties last year. He only had 8 homers post All-Star break. So obviously the pitching adjustments caught up with him. And I really don't see him being much more than a power hitter with low average and not the RBI total that he should be at. He only had 63 last year.
Yeah, and when we talk about the Brewers infield, outside of Travis Shaw, I think it's important to remember that everybody has a threat in waiting. Eric Thames should not really play the outfield, and I don't think he's going to play the outfield much. He had a number of sort of leg problems. He was sort of nursing his legs along last year, and so that doesn't lend very well for the outfield. He's got really, really bad range in the outfield as well, so I doubt he's more than a stopgap or a late inning guy in the outfield. And at first base, they seemed to turn more and more to their number one pinch hitter last year, Jesus Aguiar, as a guy that they used a lot. And so if Aguiar got really hot, the one thing about the meager and reasonable price that the Brewers are paying for Eric Thames is that Thames' salary does not indicate that he absolutely has to be in the lineup every day. Aguiar is surprisingly, he looks like he would be a base clogging force because he doesn't really look like he has a major league physique, but he hustles around pretty well, and they hung on to him on their roster for almost the entirety of last year, despite the fact that they were really trying to figure out how to struggling to get him at bats when Thames was hitting well. So, and obviously second base and shortstop both have the threat of Sogard. Sogard does not have nearly the range of Arcia. Arcia can really make some incredible plays, but Sogard is very steady and grades out decent at shortstop. And obviously, it almost plays out like VR and Sogard are in a dead heat to try and play their way into the regular second base job as the season opens. So Shaw's the only one who's really set in stone. And on top of that, I mean, we haven't even talked about behind the dish yet, which last year was Jet Bandy and Manny the Pineapple Express Pina were the guys behind the plate. And I actually was pretty heavily invested. I had Pina in two different NFBC deep drafts last year, which worked out very nicely for me when I ran into injuries with my other catchers. So the point being is that now this year we have Pina and we have a good old standby and big catcher from the A's that they brought in last year who had to handle it down the stretch. Which catcher do you like for the Brewers next year?
So with Pina and Vogt, those are two good catchers, I believe, two really good major league catchers. As far as fantasy goes, I think having both of them is going to split the production in half, make it a little worse for both guys. But as far as MLB-wise, I really like these guys. Both guys could hit.
Yeah, I think there is a school of thought that, especially in really deep two-catcher leagues, etc., that maybe they work as second catchers in the max, the Suzuki sort of range, meaning that you can actually get more value from a catcher who performs well on a part-time basis than you can from a catcher who performs very poorly on a full-time basis. But that would only be for deeper leagues. Certainly wouldn't be for one catcher leagues. Manny Pina had a very high batting average for a lot of last year, sort of a dead pull power hitter. Vogt has got a lot more power, but he's a lot longer in the tooth, and he's had problems with his knees and his back in the past. So either one would be very hard to necessarily rely on. As an aside, what do you think, if you had to put an over-under on Brewer wins for this year, where would you put the likelihood of Brewer wins this year?
I'm looking at the standings here, and I don't see how they don't compete for a wild card. At least they seem around the seventh best team to me. So when the way you're talking about them, I think they're a little bit better than what you're expecting. I know you're built for failure in Milwaukee, I guess. But as far as wins go, how many did they win last year?
Last year they won 86.
They were on 83 or 84.
Yeah, I expect them to. I expect them to lose a few more games than they did last year. And the only thing I guess I want to clarify is not so much that I think that they're not going to try and win, because I do think they're going to try and win. I just think they're trying to figure out the right timing to shove the chips all in on the table as to when all of their minor leaguers are going to actually, you know, chip in and really have something for them. As long as I have your expertise on the line with me, I just want to mention I have some frustration with prospect fatigue. With minor leaguers in general, I have some fatigue. People talking, or it came up earlier in the San Diego podcast as well. You know, I try not to get too excited about minor league talent that hasn't reached double A yet. And there's reasons for it. You know, the Lucas Ursigs, the Monty Harrisons, the Corey Rays. It seems like they really get filtered out, and they have a major hurdle left in double A, which is, you know, I guess is no big secret. But when people get excited about a farm team, I want to know how close and the ETAs, because unless the person is already really performing well at double A, I don't like to get excited about how much major league impact they have. And Lewis Brinson is one of those guys right now. Lewis Brinson reminds me some of Jorge Soler, in so much as Soler really struggled to adjust at every level. You know, the Soler story is probably not over yet. He probably gets a shot to rebound this year from what was really a dreadful season last year. Until I see actual major league evidence of major league impact, I don't get too excited about farm systems. You think I'm being too pessimistic on the Brewers system as well when I say that?
No, I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head here, because they got a bunch of good guys, don't get me wrong, but these guys are still a year or two away. Besides Brinson, and there's one dark horse that I see in the Brewers system, Corbin Burnes. He wasn't really the highest touted prospect in the world, but he's just been completely dominating the minor leagues. His ERA is a 1.74 over his minor league career, and he's up to double A now. Last season, so you figure he pitched in triple A this season, he could make some kind of impact on the Brewers later in the year. But other than that, the guys like Ray, Ortiz, the Asian kid doesn't ring a bell right now. Yes.
I don't know how to pronounce it, but
yeah. So they got a bunch of good guys. They're just another year or two away. But I keep an eye on Corbin Burnes for sure.
Yeah, he is their interesting. And the Brewers have been better over time at these kind of prospects. The guys who are not sort of the blue chip prospect. They had the one class that really helped them: the J.J. Hardy, Ricky Weeks, Prince Fielder. Class followed up by the Ryan Braun hit, obviously. But as a generality, they've had a number of pitchers that have really helped them over time, the Carlos Villanueva types, that have really done a lot of damage and done a lot of good things at the major league level without being the high level prospects. So Corbin Burnes, who makes me think of Corbin Burnson, who I believe is a third baseman in the major league movies. But Corbin Burnes is the most recent guy that looks like he will have an impact. But hopefully it was informative to the listeners out there, and you guys had an opportunity to learn some stuff about the Brewers that you wouldn't normally get everywhere else. So I am guardedly optimistic about the Brewers, and our friend Mike Levin from afar seems to be a little bit more optimistic about them in general. They play in the right park. They definitely have the right style of play to help for fantasy as far as a lot of their players run, and they have the opportunity to hit for power. So do not sleep on the Brewers as a fantasy option, as most years in Miller Park will warrant that kind of attention. So one more time, tell everybody what you're working on right now, Mike Levin, and why don't you tell us how many drafts you're in already? And after that, give us your Twitter feed, and then we'll send everyone off.
So before I get to all that, I just want to make one last point on the Brewers. I forgot to make it before. Jesus Aguilar, the only thing that stopped him from playing last season or playing more last season was Eric Thames' first half. And I don't see Eric Thames having that first half again. So Aguilar, if he hits another 450 in spring training, he's going to get his at-bats and he's going to hit his homers. I actually like a lot about Aguilar. But like you were saying, you can follow me on Twitter at MikeTheRotoCop.
All right. Look for Mike's voice on Twitter. I am Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at just chucking it. Thanks everyone for listening. FWFB doing everything we can to get you through these this cold stove doldrum that we've been going through. But stuff's got to start happening here soon. So keep in tune to FWFB, and we will try and keep you up on everything that's going on.